the home of Mary H. Hall, 53 East Broadway in Bel Air, Maryland. Mary, you have lived in Harford County and in Bel Air for most of your life. I know you have seen many changes from a quiet little town to a busy county seat, haven't you?
Yes, I surely have in almost 70 years in the scenes and lifestyle of Bel Air and Harford County. We are the seventh generation of the Hall family in Harford. My great-great-grandfather, Aquilla Hall, was one of the patriots who rebelled against British tyranny and helped formulate the Bush Declaration in 1775. Our ancestors once owned many hundreds of acres in Lower Harford, but we don't have one square inch of it. Only one estate, Sophia's Dairy, built by Aquilla Hall in 1768, has been restored. Most of them have been sold to developers, and hundreds of houses now stand where once there was only one. Constant Friendship, Box Hill, Cedar Grove, all have been or are being changed into housing developments. All the lovely woodlands and green fields are gone forever. My father was Thomas White Hall, and my mother, Mary Harris Hall. Mother's family were not native Marylanders. They came here from the Midwest in the early 1900s. I am the oldest of four children, a sister, Henrietta, and two brothers, Edward and Thomas White, Jr. I was born in a house not a block from Grandmother Harris's home, in which my sister and I now live. We've lived on Broadway in four different houses all our lives, except for 2 years during World War I, when we had to move to Grandfather Hall's farm at Emerton. Farm life was rugged then at best. No water in the house, just a pump near the back door. So, of course, no bathroom, no electricity or furnace. We had Franklin stoves in the fireplaces with registers over them for the heat to go upstairs. Not much did. Pitchers of water on the washstands in each bedroom and bath water heating on the big kitchen range, where it was poured into a wash tub and we children were bathed according to age, the youngest first, and a little clean water added in between. During the dreadful flu epidemic of 1718, taking care of the sick under those conditions was awful. It was almost impossible to get a doctor or nurses. Lots of people died. Much of the travel was still by horse and buggy in the country areas over red clay and gravel roads. We came to school by horse and buggy. We moved back to Bel Air as soon as we could, and to Broadway. Daddy was a teller in the old Harford Bank and also sold life insurance for Prudential. The Harford Bank was in the little brick building at Cortland and Wall Streets, much later a liquor dispensary, and now I think the law library for the courthouse. It is part of the Masonic Temple, which is soon to be demolished and join other landmarks in oblivion, to make way for an addition to the courthouse. There were only two banks in town, the other being the Second National, now the First National Bank of Maryland. The Harford Bank extended its services to Edgewood Arsenal and Aberdeen Proving Ground, and Dad drove his Model T Ford and later his Dodge to the post twice each week to transact business with the Army. There was no bank building on the post, only a room and headquarters, and he carried thousands of dollars up and down the road with no protection except a .38 revolver. The establishment of the Army post brought a lot of extra money into the county, and those bank trips were probably the forerunner of our branch banks today. Mm-hmm. Now there's a bank on almost every other corner and a branch in nearly every shopping center. Speaking of banks, everyone old enough to recall it has sad memories of the crash in 1929 and the terrible depression that followed in the early 30s. Those years changed the lives and fortunes of everyone in the country. I remember when Roosevelt suddenly closed the banks in 1933, people had very little cash on hand. I spent my last 50 cents on a jigsaw puzzle to try to take my mind off our troubles. Daddy died very suddenly in December 1929 at age 55. In my childhood, Bel Air was a lovely, quiet little town. There were only six or eight streets, most of them not paved, and they were lined on both sides with maple trees which met overhead and formed a lovely bower in summer. even on downtown Main Street. Most of those trees have fallen victim to time or the power saw. The noise and dirt from almost constant traffic on Broadway, it's part of Route 1, has shattered the peace and quiet, and it's no longer a pleasant place to live. Our nice big porches where we spent many happy hours are practically useless because of the dust, and it's next to impossible to carry on a conversation with the frequent interruptions of the trucks that go by. Many of the handsome old homes have been destroyed in the name of progress to be replaced by stores, gas stations, supermarkets, and so forth, and acres of blacktop. At the corner of Broadway and Main was the large, gracious home of the Hunter family, with a wide lawn bordered by a privet hedge and old maple and spruce trees. The driveway wound from Main Street through to Broadway. Across the street, where the Mutual Insurance Building is now, was a rambling frame house of the Richardsons, a boarding house where people from Baltimore came to spend the summer in the country. That was quite an enterprise, and many people with large homes took summer boarders. Another large house belonging to the E.T.H. Harrisons stood at Bond and Gordon, where the Crown gas station is. The post office site was the lovely home of the S.A. Williams, grandfather of Albert Close, one of our present judges of the circuit court. The post office, like the library, has operated in many buildings all over town, but both have finally ended in beautiful permanent locations. On the opposite corner was the Bruns House, later Forward Circle Inn, at present a vacant lot grown up in weeds. There was only one school in town when I started in 1911, and even when I graduated in 1922. It was a brick building on Gordon Street, now used as offices by the Board of Education. And there were only one and two room schools scattered over the county, where one teacher usually taught all seven grades. I think the other school on Gordon was built about 1933. These were adequate until the population explosion. Now the school complexes are unbelievable. We didn't have as many pupils as there are teachers today. The curriculum was quite different too. We had only 11 grades, but we covered as much ground because we didn't have all the extra frills, music, art, bands, and so forth. We did have a glee club, and in high school, we had an operetta every year. The only art was in the freshman and sophomore years. A teacher came out from the Maryland Institute in Baltimore once a week for one period. You can surmise we didn't get much out of that. Art was my favorite subject. I think I began to draw and paint when I was about 2 years old. I got a scholarship to Maryland Institute, but stayed only 1 year because mother was sick and I had to come home. School life and life in general was much simpler. We didn't have cars to take us around. There were very few paved roads and not many places to go. No Geno's or McDonald's or drive-in movies. Sometimes after school, we'd go to Richardson's or Kissling's drugstore for a soda or sundae, if we had 10 or 15 cents. Kissling's first was in the little building that's now Hershey's clothing store. In summer, they had a patio garden in the backyard with a lattice arbor covered with vines and flowers, and they served ice cream there. Usually on Saturday afternoons, we went to movies at the Busy Moon. It was across the from Courtney Hardware, where there's a sporting goods store. They had a serial, Perils of Pauline, with Pearl White, and we could hardly wait from week to week to see what terrible fate would befall the heroine. I think tickets were 10 cents. Movies were black and white and silent, of course, with turf subtitles and mood music played on a tinny piano. After World War I, we had a more up-to-date theater, the Argonne, owned by Earl Birkins, and then the present one, built in the later 1900s. On weekends, in good weather, we had a hiking club in our freshman year. We took long walks and afterwards went to the home of a member for cookies and cocoa. I can hear you young folks laugh. Square, huh? Roller skating was a favorite sport, though the slate sidewalks made it rough going. In winter, we went to Lake Fanny to ice skate. There was no town pond. It seems we had lots more snow then, and it lasted longer. And sledding parties were great fun, especially on moonlit nights. The streets were not scraped or salted, so most any incline was good sledding, with very few cars to look out for. Not many people could go to Baltimore to the theater or symphony, as roads were bad and cars not too reliable. They often broke down or had a flat tire every time you drove any distance. Twice a year, we had entertainment brought to town. In summer, there was Chautauqua. A big tent was erected on the school grounds, and every afternoon and evening for a week, we had a different program. Concerts, lectures, magicians, comedians, and so on. Sort of a high-class variety show, I guess. In winter, there was Lyceum at the Masonic Temple. That was on a more serious cultural level, and I think was only once a month. Dances were also held at the Masonic Temple until the Armory was built in 1915. It wasn't a very satisfactory place to hold public functions because the room was supported by pillars throughout the center, and they were always in the way. We had dancing classes there, too. Main Street has changed more physically than any other. Some of the old buildings are still there, but many businesses have come and gone. Richardson's Drugstore and Borden Fulford's are about the only ones still operating at the same locations. Kenmore Inn, now the Safeway, was known up and down the coast. And during the racing season, it was filled to capacity. It was owned by Colonel Harry Hanway, grandfather of our present state's attorney, Edwin H.W. Holland. The Country Club Inn was just what its name implies, more of a country club than a hotel. It was on Bond Street, where the Poland Building stands. It was a long, low frame structure with a porch all across the front, big shade trees almost hiding it from the street. In back was a beautiful garden with boxwood bushes trimmed in fancy shapes. Lovely garden parties, teas, and luncheons were held there by the social set. It too was famous afar for its charm, hospitality, and relaxing atmosphere. The races were a great drawing card for Bel Air for years. People came from as far as New York. The track was where the Harford Mall is now, and races were held there until the early 60s or maybe 59. The grounds were also used for the county fairs. A vital part of Bel Air and surrounding areas was the Maryland Pennsylvania Railroad, the only public transportation for passengers and freight. It ran from Baltimore to York, Pennsylvania, with at least 30 stops along the way through beautiful country. It was a boon to people working in Baltimore, to the school children, and to milk shippers and the farmers to get their goods to market. It was sort of slow and not too dependable at times, and was often dubbed the Ma and Pa, maybe and perhaps misery and patience. With the development of cars, buses, and trucks, it was forced out of business in 1959, and another picturesque part of our past faded away. Now, even the big railroads seem to be in financial trouble. Many of our buying and eating habits have changed over the years, too. Before the era of supermarkets, air freight, electric freezers, and refrigerators, we ate only fresh fruits and vegetables in season, and what was grown locally. It was a treat to have fresh peas, lima beans, corn, peaches, strawberries, and so forth as they came into season. Hucksters came around in wagons and later small trucks, selling door to door. I especially remember the strawberry and watermelon men calling, "Anna Randall strawberries, 10 cents a box, watermelons, red ripe watermelons," and were they good? Early in my childhood, the only way to preserve food, meat and milk in particular, was in an ice house. These were deep pits as big as a room with an A-line roof, usually of slate, a door at one end and a ladder that went down to the bottom. Chunks of ice cut from ponds or the river were put in and covered with straw for insulation. The food was wrapped carefully and kept there until needed. There wasn't even a lock on the door. No one ever took anything. We had an ice house at one of the houses even on Broadway, and of course every farmer had one, as well as a spring house or stream, so the running water would keep the milk cool. Later came ice boxes and manufactured ice. It was delivered to the door in blocks up to 100 pounds. There was a pipe from the ice compartment to drain off the water from the melting ice into a pan underneath on the floor. If you forgot to empty the pan, which often happened, the floor should have got a good washing. A far cry from our self-defrosting electric refrigerators. Telephones and service have made great strides since the early 1900s. The ones I first remember were the clumsy wooden ones that hung on the wall and had a crank to signal the operator. They were usually too high for a child to reach, not a bad fault, really. There were 2- and 4-party lines, and each had its own ring, like a long and 2 shorts. You could hear all the rings on the line, so you had to listen carefully for yours. A favorite indoor sport was to listen in on a conversation when another number rang. Wiretapping, you might call it. Compare this with the complex electronic phone system today. 2 very interesting phases of life in my early youth were the arrivals every spring of the hobos and gypsies. The hobos had a permanent camp by the stream along the railroad track at Heavenly Waters, which will be part of our town park when arrangements are finished. They went from door to door asking for food, and some even offered to work for it. Once in a while, one of them drank too much Sterno, a canned fuel they used for cooking, mostly alcohol, and he'd end up in the gutter, which disturbed the women and small children. Someone would call the sheriff and haul the tramp to jail. The gypsies arrived in their colorful clothes and decorated wagons, and they always camped for the summer at the north edge of town in the Wysong's meadow. They had a reputation for stealing anything they wanted, especially chickens and vegetables from the farmers. Some people said they even kidnapped children, and parents kept the little ones close to home. Nearly everyone was half afraid of them.
Where do you think they went in the winter, Mary, when they were here in the summer?
Well, I think they followed the warm weather.
I know.
Mm-hmm. They just
went further south. Were you scared as a kid?
No, and there was one young woman, Lucille Robinson, not the present one, her mother, who was fascinated by them and often went to their camp to have her fortune told. She became good friends with the gypsy queen and was given some lovely presents. Once I went with her and we had lunch with them. I didn't tell my parents I was going and kept it secret for a long time till I was sure they wouldn't punish me. It was fun. We had stew.
You mean you really ate with them?
Yes. Great big pot they had over the fire.
And you weren't scared?
No, I wasn't scared. Not with Lucille along. She wasn't scared of anything. I have so many personal memories of the good old days, common to everyone, not really relevant to the life in Bel Air in particular. Dancing classes, which were a must for young ladies and gentlemen, not much fun, especially for the boys. We were about 10 or 11. Dances later on at the Army post to entertain the soldiers. A bus was sent to collect us, and we got all dressed up. Many a girl lost her heart over a guy in uniform, or thought she did, just like today.
Could I ask you a question on your dancing class? What kind of music did you have?
Oh, an old-time grind-up victrola.
Oh,
and it was very... We did the minuet and all the little simple things, you know. And some of the boys couldn't keep time. I won't mention any names, but one in particular would count in your ear. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And he hasn't learned to dance yet. There were house parties at the old Hartford Boat Club on Bush River. Swimming. The river wasn't polluted then. And boat rides. They really were the good old days.
I suppose we could... I suppose you could compare those good old days, but do they have any boats on the river today?
Well, they have speed boats and all sorts of pollution and everything else.
Mary, I wanted to interrupt you just a minute to ask you, at the fair, didn't we have a track meet too? Wasn't that over at the fairground where we tried out for medals or broad jumps and relays?
I think it was at the fairgrounds, but it wasn't at the time of the fair.
Uh-huh.
I think the fair was just an agricultural display and the work of the school children and the harness racing, which was a great attraction. They had a large grandstand, and people came to see those, who were fascinating. And of course the midway, when the children wanted to ride the merry-go-rounds and the Ferris wheel, and all that kind of business, and have their fortunes told, and eat spun sugar candy.
Well, now the flat racing, or the opposite from the harness racing, didn't start until later, did it?
No.
When it became a racetrack.
No, a number of years later. I don't remember just when. But I think they didn't ever have that at the fair. That was just a separate. When the racing season began, they had a certain racing season, you know, that they ran a week or two, seems to me. And a lot of people in Bel Air put their money on it and lost on those nags, too.
Another thing I wanted to ask you was at the Country Club Inn, was it members only, or could anybody stay there?
No, it was just an inn. It was just called, I think maybe at one time it might have been a country club, but I don't remember that. And it, during my mother and father's early marriage, was quite a gathering place. I think they had a piano in the main foyer, and someone would play the piano, and they'd gather around and sing and have a quiet evening with their friends. And lots of the bachelors in town, I think, stayed there. Friends of my father's stayed there.
That's why all the parties were there. Huh?
But they didn't have any real orchestras that you could call like we have today.
Right.
They had maybe like a little string orchestra or something like that for dancing, and they did the foxtrot and the waltz and the two-step.
Sounds very pretty. Mary, do we still have any of the clubs down along the river? Like they used to have the boat clubs?
Well, the new one on Bush River is called the Bush River Boat Club. It's the only one I know of. The one that we knew was called the Harford Boat Club. And my father was one of the charter members of that. It was a very small, rustic building, right high up on a bank overlooking the river, just opposite the railroad bridge. Could see the trains go by. And there was an old caretaker and his wife who lived there, and he couldn't swim, but he ran the club launch. It was a great big lumbering old boat, held about, I guess, 25 people. And on Sunday afternoons, everybody got in, and we went down to Old Baltimore, which was one of the far points. I don't know how many miles it was, but it is now part of Aberdeen Proving Ground. And we would have a picnic there. Now you're not allowed to land there because the guns go off all the time, and it's very dangerous in that part of the river. There were camping bungalows at the club, the women's on one side of the club building and the men's on the other. And there were deep ravines between them. I guess they wanted to keep the men and women well separated, but I think they crossed the bridges whenever they felt like it. The wife of the caretaker was a wonderful cook, and she had, if you called up ahead of time, she would have a dinner for you on the long porch of their caretaker's house there. Delicious fried chicken and seafood and all sorts of wonderful food. I can remember going down there very often and having a Sunday dinner.
Was this just open to members, or could you
go and buy just members? Mm-hmm. No, that's all. And then the swimming wasn't good at the boat club. The children waded there, but we'd get in rowboats or canoes and go over to Flying Point, which is now a park. And at that time it was nice and shady, great big trees over there, and they'd taken all those down and put up a hot dog stand or something over there, Coca-Cola machines and that sort of business.
I'm not familiar with that today, although I was down to a bull roast or something, but do they still swim in the water there, or aren't you allowed to go in? Is it just raining?
I think, theoretically, Bush River is supposed to be polluted, but there are always people who take chances and do that kind of thing. The only trouble is that it's sandy bottom, only a little way out. Very muddy bottom, and unless you really swim, you get in all that gooey mud, it isn't much fun.
Is the pollution coming from farther up the river, or is it right here coming from Harford?
I think they blame some of it on the Beta Shoe Company, which is now at the head of the river there, and also farther down, and just the general dumping of things the way people do these days into the river.
Very probably the good old days are spoiled sometimes by what we call progress.
I think they're greatly spoiled by what we call progress. Especially in that pollution area. I don't think we would have thought of throwing anything into the river. We had paper bags and we put it in, took it back and put it in the trash when we got home. I suppose there always were people who would leave a tin can or two here and there, but of course also we didn't have all those bottled Coca-Colas and cans of beer and that sort of thing to take on picnics. We took lemonade and iced tea and usually just in a jar with a hunk of ice in the early picnic days, and we'd take a watermelon and float it in the river and get it nice and cold, and that was really good. Sometimes we'd have watermelon eating contests. And one time I ate almost a whole one.
Did you get sick?
Mac Webster was my opponent, and I beat him.
Truly good old days.
Oh, boy.